This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Trackhouse Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. Welcome to another edition. Before we get started, I've got to say we're starting something new this week. Charlie is joining me now. We're on webcam together, so we can gauge each other's reactions like we're in the studio together. So, yeah, exactly. Stuff like that. Stick it on his tongue. We're hoping down the road that we can turn this into a vlog of some sort, where it's a TV show. You can watch it on YouTube or whatever video streaming device you use, or you could still listen to it. So that's an option we're playing with down the road. Also, I do want to let you know, the week of Thanksgiving, we're going to take a break from Inside Open. We'll give our guys some time with our families after this crazy year. So before we get started on our news and notes, Charlie's going to be early because we've got a packed show for you today. Stingray Rob, the 2020 Indy Pro 2000 champion, joins us. Interesting to see some of the path he took. We'll talk a little bit about that. Proud to say we have three-time Indianapolis 500 champion Elio Castroneves on the show. He just got signed to a deal for Meyer Shank Racing. We'll talk about that and him going into the 12 Hours of Sebring this weekend. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about news and notes, but Formula 3 is coming to the United States. We're not talking about FR Americas. So we're actually talking about the legitimate Formula 3. Will Buxton will be joining us as well to talk about that. As always, you can contact us, InsideOpenWheel@gmail.com, Twitter at InsideOpenWheel, Facebook InsideOpenWheel, and on our Google voicemail, drop us a line, 815-714-9260. Well, holy cow, it's so rare to see you in person. Charlie and I, we've known each other for over 10 years. You know, we don't see each other very much because we don't do... we don't want to look at each other, you know, camera wise, because we don't want to know what's going on below the belt. But in all seriousness, it's great to see you, man. This is fantastic.
Yeah, this is cool. It feels funny because oftentimes when you're doing your monologue and all that stuff, I'm kind of just
You're zoning out,
looking at cat pictures on the internet. so now I can't really get away with that as easily.
You know what? I'll say this: if people knew what I did in the interview, you know, when people were talking, they would definitely tune out. And that's kind of why I'm trying to figure out how to do B-roll and all that during the drivers. Anyway, so it's a busy week for news. We'll start off with the big one, and this kind of affects you as well. The 2021 Formula Race Promotion Schedule came out earlier this week, and you and I knew about one of the schedules. One of our insiders told us what one of the racetracks were going to be, but three new tracks on the schedule. One of the races, I should say, is tentative. So it's going to start the season off in April 1st to the 3rd at Carolina Motorsport Park. The tentative date is Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, April 30th through May 2nd, May 21st through the 23rd at Barber. That's another new track. Pit Race, June 18th for the 20th for the first time that season. Then Road America, July 30th through August 1st. That's their third new track. Summit Point, August 20th through the 22nd. Then the series makes their debut at the Audubon Country Club in Joliet on the South Course, September 10th through the 12th, and then they round out the season back at Pit Race, October 15th through the 17th. You and I talked about this a little bit, Charlie, off the air, but getting a chance to digest the schedule, what are your thoughts?
It's a pretty big, it's probably the biggest change that I've seen in a long time from FRP. I mean, for as long as I can remember, they've been going to pretty much all the classic Eastern American road courses. They've started the season in Atlanta. I mean, how many years have they done that in a row?
Years.
And they're not even going there at all for this year or for next year. There's two new circuits.
Four actually.
And I guess Barber's kind of a new circuit. So if you include Barber, there's four. I keep skipping over Road America. So it's a huge difference. It's sort of expanding the map as well, which is, you know, it's debatable whether that's a good thing or not. But you know, to go to Road America, I don't think many people are gonna be complaining about driving a little bit farther for that. Carolina, I've never raced there, but I've driven there once. My first test as a signed driver in Pro Mazda was at Carolina Motorsports Park. I drove at Barber, in Skip Barber, and I've never driven an Autobahn, so that'll be a new one if I'm able to get there. But it's a big change, the biggest change we've had in a while.
Yeah, I know Assetto Corsa just launched the Autobahn track, so that'll be good to get out there and try that out. I've got to get a gaming computer. Maybe I should put a GoFundMe up for one of those. And what's interesting, too, if you look at the press release, Road America will be shared with the all-new Porsche Sprint Challenge. We'll get more information from that from USAC a little bit later on. I've been digging. I know a couple people told me about that to kind of keep an eye on things, but
USAC is sanctioning a Porsche series.
Yeah, they're sanctioning a Porsche series for the previous generation of the GT3 Cup car, from my understanding. So Atlantic's obviously, and Vintage Sports 2000s won't be at all the tracks. We'll put the press release up on our Facebook page, so keep a close eye for that. Some sad news in the Road to Indy, and this one came as a shock to both of us. It was announced on the 10th that Bilardi Auto Racing will be closing their shops. Team owner Brian Bilardi has decided with a heavy heart that it is time to leave the racing world behind. This decision did not come lightly, but after a cancellation of the 2020 Indy Lights season by IndyCar leadership, this has proven to be a great time of uncertainty. A decade ago, they started out in USF 2000, made their way up to Indy Lights. They've earned a team championship, driver championship, two Freedom 100s, numerous race wins, and podium finishes. I've got to say, this is horrible news. I'm gutted for Brian Bilardi and the team, but he cited health reasons as the fact. So, Brian, we wish you well. Hopefully, you get a speedy recovery, and we want to see you back at the racetrack.
Yeah, hopefully this isn't a sign of things to come. Hopefully this is just a one-off thing. But yeah, it's very surprising. It sounded like they were gearing up and getting ready to go.
And when I talked to Dan Anderson about a month ago, that's one thing he said is, you know, he listed Bilardi as one of the teams. So I don't think anybody was anticipating this. But not all hope's lost. We're hearing that there might be a team that's going to step in. So we'll find out more in a couple weeks when we have Rob Howden and Steve Wittich on. We'll kind of dig some more into them. But, you know, to take a look at the roster drivers that they had, you know, Gabby Chavez, who was their team champion, was their champion, Zach Veach, Felix Rosenquist, Peter Dempsey, Aaron Tielitz, Shelby Blackstock, some guy who thinks he's now a PR agent that used to be a racer. He's a Viking. I know he doesn't listen, so that's why I have no problem bashing Anders Krohn. But in all seriousness, just a horrible loss for, Brian Bilardi and John Brunner. Hopefully those guys can get back on their feet sooner rather than later. Something that I'm going to talk about with Will Buxton as well. Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen are confirming that they are talking to some IndyCar teams for 2021, which is interesting, I think, because we know how Kevin Magnussen, obviously he grew up around, you know, champ cars and all that with his dad racing. But Romain Grosjean, it's a little surprising. And I will say this, it is refreshing to see Formula One drivers not seeing IndyCar as a retirement opportunity anymore, but as an extension to their careers.
I mean, I'm sure they're saying that, but I mean, Romain Grosjean has been in Formula One forever. And it kind of feels like, I mean, most Formula One drivers don't have as long a career as he had
right
in Formula One, especially in the mid pack. So who knows where he's going to end up. But I think you could make the argument that it is kind of a post F1 career move, rather than sort of, I guess you could, somewhere in between the, it's not quite a retirement home, but it's also, it's definitely not a step up. Maybe a step laterally, maybe a small step down, half a step down.
I wouldn't be surprised if this all comes to fruition. I would not be surprised to see Magnussen at Coyne and Grosjean at Carlin for the road course races with Connor Daly in the ovals while Ed's racing the ovals.
That sounds very plausible. Yeah, it'd be interesting. It would be interesting to see Ed Carpenter at Carlin.
So kind of like a Dale Earnhardt thing, where you race for one team and then you run the other team. That's, you know, that's actually quite plausible.
My brain may have misheard what you were suggesting.
The usual: Carpenter runs the ovals and Daly runs the road courses. And while Carpenter's in the car for the ovals, Daly goes over to Carlin like he did last year.
It's been a long day of doing nothing. My brain is turning to mush.
Oh, you know, you're not the one with dinner in the oven right now. So, okay, we'll talk. That's a story for another time. But, you know, that's the thing. Silly season's still underway. We don't know where Connor Daly's going to land. We don't know. I would imagine he's going to be in the car for the road courses. Carlin said that they're going to have one full-time team, possibly a part-time team. So that might be a possibility as well. We don't know who's going to be in the second Dale Coyne car. Really don't know who's going to be in the Sealmaster Dale Coyne car either. So, I mean, there's so much that needs to be done. Yes, we have Rossi has this signed. Ryan Hunter and DHL have re-signed. We have Scott McLaughlin in IndyCar. That's great. We have all the top teams covered. We just don't know where the other teams are right now.
Yeah, and it's gonna be a very long offseason.
It always is with IndyCar, and that's one thing that I really enjoyed about this season. Yes, it was short, and I understand why, but we ran till October. I enjoyed every second of that. That needs to happen more often than not.
Yeah, I definitely think that that their schedule should run, you know, at least towards mid to end October, mid-late October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I remember several years ago, they straight up said, we don't want to compete with the NFL.
I remember that.
We're going to end our season at the end of August. Thankfully, they've sort of gone away from that a bit. But, you know, going into October, I think, is the right call.
I remember that was around the time they were still doing, you know, the big ovals, like, you know, Chicagolands, Michigans. They were doing all those ovals, and they, you know, well, we don't want to compete with the NFL. If you're going to be in this landscape, you've got to go toe-to-toe with some of the biggest sports. You know, I want to...
Yeah, you can't be a top line sports property and concede defeat like that. Yep. You have to fight for your spot.
I mean, take that first weekend off, fine, but you know what? You gotta have your championship season toe to toe with the NFL. Done.
Yeah.
All right, also making news, another driver signing for Formula 4, Ryan Yardley to make USA Racing debut with Kiwi Motorsport. The 22-year-old New Zealander took a sabbatical this year because of COVID-19, and he has an extensive championship. He's raced in the CAMS Pace Australia F4 Championship. He claimed a second place in the Australian Grand Prix last year. He raced Toyota 86s, which is basically the toy baron that, you know, you see on the roads. He was also Rookie of the Year in the Toyota Racing Series in 2018, which Toyota Racing Series, kind of like an F3, as we've heard. So that's going to be interesting. And I think the... I've got to take a look at my emails. Did that go through? Give me a second. Yes, I think it went through after. Did we talk about the F4 FRA schedule last weekend? I can't remember.
I don't think so.
Okay, so let's talk about that as well before we go to a break. So it was announced that Formula 4 and FRA are going to run some races with SVRA. This is in conjunction with their promotion of the Pirello Racing Holdings. Tony Pirello, who owns SVRA, is going to promote the F4 FRA championships starting next year.
Sports Vintage Racing Association?
Yeah, SVRA, yeah. So basically, there are going to be some weekends where you have, you know, Trans Am, F4, and FR Americas. So there's going to be a preseason schedule for both F4 and FRA. Some races will be run with FR and F4 together. Some races will be apart. Some of the notable races... For the first time ever, F4 and FRA go across, go west. They start off in Sonoma. They go to WeatherTech Raceway, Laguna Seca. Then there's a long break for both of them. F4 goes to Brainerd July 16th through the 18th. And I heard that was a rumor early on, so I knew about that one. But FR Americas has a huge gap between May 1st and August 13th when the F4R guys go to Three Rivers, which I think we should go to Three Rivers just because.
Yes. Three Rivers is awesome.
So if anybody wants to fund us, insideopenwheel@gmail.com, I'd love to go. I want to go to Three Rivers so bad.
You know who runs at Three Rivers?
Who?
Canadian F1600.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you run there?
I think there's a good chance I still have the tires that I raced at Montreal last year.
Oh, my God.
Probably be good for another race weekend.
Didn't you race at Three Rivers with Pro Mazda as well?
Yep, 2 years. I never made it past the first corner.
You know you're supposed to turn right there, right?
Yes. That part I didn't have a problem with. It was the other cars around me that were the problem.
Driver excuses with Charlie Ante.
I'll admit the first year it was my fault.
All right, fair enough.
The second year was not.
Go figure. Also, what I found, at first when I heard the schedule, I found it puzzling that COTA was not going to be run with the United States Grand Prix, but as we found out when the F4 schedule came out, no, F3 schedule, that's, you know, FIA F3 was going to be at COTA. We'll talk more about that with Will Buxton later on, but that kind of made more sense, so... That basically wraps up our news. As we said, it's a busy, busy day here on Inside Open Wheel. I want to give you a quick preview about next week as well. We're going to have the F4 FRA championship review. We're going to do some formula race promotions as well. But now we're getting into our season review. We're also getting into our Legends of Open Wheel and some other cool features Charlie and I are working on for the offseason. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel is Stingray Rob, your Indy Pro 2000 champion.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
If you've been following Indy Pro 2000 the past couple of years, you've noticed a name that's been coming up through the ranks. It's Stingray Rob, and he captured the 2020 Indy Pro 2000 Championship a couple of weeks ago, and I've got to say, congratulations. You teaming up with Juncos Racing probably was one of the smart moves, really a smart move for anybody, but for somebody to work their way up to be the champion, it's fantastic. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Juncos Racing was a big part of my success this last season and even the season before in 2019. So they've been working hard to develop a car and that is good for me and also develop me as a driver. And I mean, as we've seen, they've done a fairly good job of both of those.
And we'll talk more about Ricardo Juncos and the whole team. But really, looking at your roster, you ran in karting, you ran in Indy Pro, Pro Mazda at the time too. But I also want to talk about a little interesting thing I found out about you while I was doing research. But your fourth season in Pro Mazda, Indy Pro 2000, we talked about your second with Juncos Racing. This year had an interesting turn. You had 7 wins, and you swept the weekend, the 3-race weekend at IMS, 11 podiums, and you finished no worse than 10th over the season. That's hugely consistent for, such a competitive category, but it's got to be refreshing to know that you were able to stay in the top 10 all season long.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and that was kind of the goal of the season. We've seen past championship winners where they're not dominating the series by winning every single race, but they finish, second, third, fourth every weekend. And so that's kind of what we knew we had to do in order to, again, win that championship this year. But with this season being so competitive, 8 different winners in this series, that's on 7 different teams. So that just gives you a picture of, how competitive the field was this year and how often we were fighting for 5th, 6th and feeling like we were doing pretty good just because everyone was so good. And you don't really know who's going to be the guy until you get there that coming weekend. And, and see who finally has that last bit of speed that separates them from the rest of the field.
Well, this year was your breakout win also as well. You know, taking a look at your previous results with World Speed Motorsports, you know, you finished no worse than 11th in 2017, 2018. You had a couple hiccups, but, you know, that's to be expected throughout a season, especially with a new team when you were with Team Pelfrey. Then you go to Juncos, you podium a lot, but weren't able to break through for that win. That first one came the second Mid-Ohio race. I'm sorry, third Mid-Ohio race. I got to learn how to count, apparently. What is that like, getting that breakthrough race, especially when you sniffed the podium so many times the previous season?
Yeah, obviously I've become more of a mainstay in Indy Pro 2000 than the the car itself, as we saw in a recent article. But, you know, coming through the series, when I first entered in 2017, I didn't really have any high expectations. Obviously, I wanted to win and do well and, you know, have a good rookie season. And obviously, the competitors around me had different ideas for that. But, you know, it was kind of a learning season of getting my feet wet into the international world of Formula cars, in the sense of how competitive the stage that we are on is. And then the following season, they brought in the new PM18, the Tatis PM18 car. So I had to adapt to that a little bit, as well as the new team. And, you know, I think that season was actually more detrimental to my career than anything else. And so we knew that the following season was going to be very important to step into a good seat with a good team that was wanting me there and that wanted to support me and prepare me for the future as an IndyCar driver. And so we started to see those results come towards the end of last season in 2019 with Juncos Racing. I qualified pole a couple of times in the last four races of the year, once at Portland and once at Laguna Seca at the Monterey track there. And, you know, challenged for wins at both of those places, but was not close enough to capture that win. And so we made the decision, instead of moving up to Indy Lights this year, to stay in Indy Pro 2000. And the reason for that was just because moving up in Indy Lights is quite a big step, not just as a driver, but on the financial commitment as well. And so you can do a lot of development as a young up-and-coming driver in that lower series at a much better price. And we knew that the relationship was already built with Juncos Racing. And so we wouldn't have to, you know, kind of remanufacture that in the sense of trying to figure out the communication between my engineer and myself, Ricardo and myself. You know, we could just go straight into the season ready to fight for wins. But for us, that didn't start coming until, like you said, that third race at Mid-Ohio. And when I finally got that first win, it was just a huge weight lifted off my shoulders. You know, even on the in lap, started tearing up a little bit, just because it was a realization of how much work has gone on to get that award. You know, after so many years in the series, after so many trials and tribulations throughout, that finally it all paid off. And, you know, that perseverance finally turned me into the driver that I somewhat wanted to be. Obviously, I'm always trying to improve, and I'm looking to do the same going into this coming season.
Well, I think also having no Indy Lights, you saw a couple drivers that were committed to Indy Lights for the year end up running Indy Pro 2000. You had a couple drivers, you know, come up from USF 2000 who really got a good footing. And let's even mention Cody Swanson there on the ovals. You know how fast he is. So it was, It really, you know, from an observing standpoint, it looked like, you know, you came to the cream of the crop and were able to fend off those challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said before, you know, eight different winners this year, one of those being Cody Swanson. And, you know, I got to get to know Cody a little bit after that Lucas Oil race win that he had. And we had a pretty good fight there. And I think we were side by side for something like 20 laps. At least it seemed that long. It's not easy to go side by side there at Lucas Oil. And
no,
I had a really fun time going wheel to wheel with him throughout that event and getting to talk to him afterwards and congratulate him on the win. He actually did the race at Gateway there as well. And they weren't able to adapt the car, I don't think, as well as we were. And he wasn't sure of how to drive that track, because it's just a different style than what you see in a USAC or Crown car, especially on the asphalt there. So for him, it was cool to kind of talk to him and kind of coach him through after the event was over and just kind of explain the different driving styles that you have to have in these certain open wheel cars on different tracks. you know, it's kind of crazy to think about how many small changes have to be made to a car to make it ride on an oval. And then even going to a road course or street course, how you have to drive the car differently. You know, you're getting off the brakes sooner so you can get the power at apex, or if it's a tight track, you have to carry the speed in and roll it through a complex of corners versus an oval where it's very, very setup dependent. And if you don't have the right setup, you're not going to do well.
Stingray Grab joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. He is the 2020 Indy Pro 2000 champion. And I want to talk about that because you didn't get a chance to run the street courses this year. You did with St. Petersburg, but not the normal ones, your Toronto's, your, those three courses. So you had to wait till the end of the year, and really could have been a good thing because, you know, you have all those natural terrain courses, you have the ovals out of the way. So you get the feeling, okay, you know, we can get through this, but having a category like Indy Pro 2000, it really makes you adapt to different, you know, courses throughout what would be an Indy car, you know, later on down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, we didn't get the full season like we normally would, so our schedule was fairly limited in comparison. And so we didn't have to adapt quite as much this season. But it was very interesting to see, you know, because we typically race on IndyCar weekend. And so we're sharing the track with the NTT boys. And when they lay that Firestone rubber down, it tends to mix kind of oddly compared to the Cooper tire rubber. So we have to adapt accordingly on the engineering side and as a driver to those changing conditions. And so there were some weekends where we had to do that, and some weekends where we weren't with IndyCar, where we had to, you know, predict what the conditions were going to do just based off the weather instead of off the tire compound. So there's a lot, like I said, that goes into setting up the car for each of those conditions. And I'm actually really looking forward to next year with as full of a schedule as we're going to have for Indy Lights. Sounds like Nashville might be added as that TBA schedule left open. So that'll be four street courses on the schedule with St. Pete to start out the season. Then you got Detroit, I think, and then Toronto and Nashville. So we'll have quite the amount of adapting to do, especially as a new driver in the series and as a rookie. I'm hoping that I'll have enough off-season testing that I can get comfortable in the car so that when we show up to those events, I'll be able to tell the team what needs to be done and adapt quickly to the conditions.
You've been listening to Howden and Wittich too much, haven't you, about the schedule?
I may have been, just a little bit.
Yes, yeah, I know. Steve and I were talking about that a couple of weeks ago, and it's like, well, it might happen. But all right, let's talk about next year for sure. Have you talked to anybody? Have you talked to Ricardo about possibly moving up again, bringing him back to Indy Lights? What's the process been so far?
Well, obviously with the scholarship, it makes our choices a little bit easier. And I know that some teams aren't willing to operate on the scholarship amount, so that kind of dwindles our numbers down a little bit. So for me, I mean, obviously there are a couple of teams that have been the lead pack over the last few years, Juncos being one of those, Andretti as well. So looking at both those teams, I mean, we've obviously been talking with several. I think that those will be my top two options, and we'll see where I end up in the coming weeks. Hopefully I'll have an announcement here soon with who I'll be signing with. But my manager, Peter Rossi, we just left the negotiations to him, and I'm sure he'll be getting back to us shortly on who he finds a good deal with.
I was going to say, because you have yourself, Parker Thompson, Linus Lundqvist coming up. So already I'm looking at three names already that I think can contend for wins in the season. Have you watched any other racing, you know, these other competitors that you know for sure are coming in? Have you watched their styles and kind of compared notes with, you know, okay, well, I've got to do this for, you know, this driver and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know Linus as well, just because he hasn't been in the road to Indy. But that'll be something that we figure out fairly quickly. I think it's usually in the first couple of races, you're learning that anyways, kind of sorting things out, figuring out how aggressive drivers are, how you can race them, and where their strengths and weaknesses might be. And I think that's what kind of gave me an advantage a little bit this year is without having to adapt to the car team, I was able to kind of adapt the drivers a little bit and figure out who I could race and who I couldn't. And so, I mean, obviously I didn't have to come from the back too many times this year. Usually we started out front, finished out front, but there were a few times where, like Road America, we had a fuel pump issue in qualifying, didn't get a qualifying lap, started at the back. And, you know, as you're working your way through the field, you know who you're racing against. You're not gonna go side by side through the carousel there with someone that you know is overly aggressive and will put you in the wall. So obviously there are certain drivers that I know fairly well from driving with them in the past, as well as watching them come up to the road to Indy ahead of me. So we'll see how it goes. I think that St. Pete will be interesting, as it's, you know, the opening race of the year, and it's on a street course. So we don't know how people are really going to operate there, if they're going to be more timid or over aggressive, or, you know, it kind of shakes everything out through the streets there, as the concrete walls seem to be a filter more of the drivers than anything else.
And before I let you go, and that item that I noticed in my prep for this interview, you've run 4 ARCA Menard Series West races. Obviously, at the time, it was the K&N West Series. Your best finish was a 10th at the 2018 Napa Auto Parts Idaho 208. How did that help you out? And how much fun was that, actually getting in a stock car and just, you know, thrashing around? You don't have to worry about points or anything. Just get out there and have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was obviously a blast. Those cars seem somewhat like a taxi cab compared to these stiff little Formula cars, but their horsepower is unbelievable, and they're so fun to drive, especially on that quarter mile oval that we were running on. But definitely that year was kind of an adventure in itself, just because 2016 was kind of my transition year from karts to cars. And so I was driving everything from those NASCARs to Skip Barber Series, to go-karts, shifter karts in Europe, to Corvettes and dirt modified cars. So I wanted to make sure that I was doing what I wanted to, and that the series that I was going to choose was going to be where I actually wanted to be, instead of putting myself in a situation where I would be a year behind by finding out later on down the road that it wasn't exactly what I was looking for in a race car. So NASCAR was a blast in itself, and unfortunately for them, they won't get to see me there for a little while, maybe, but I enjoy the open wheels a lot more, just because they seem to be a little bit more lighter, nimble, obviously, with the downforce, and it's just kind of a more go-kart style of feeling with the power to weight ratio and how they corner throughout the series. And so that's what I was looking for, leaving karts, and that's what set me on the path of the road to Indy, just because it seemed to be the best open wheel ladder system in the world currently for drivers to develop into future NTT IndyCar stars.
Yeah, and you know, here's the thing. You are the next driver from Idaho to bring a name into IndyCar racing with Davey Hamilton, and now you. I'm really excited to see what you can do. Hey, you're making it to Indy Lights, you know, at the age of 19, so that's a good thing. How can fans follow your progress throughout the offseason and into next year?
Yeah, so if anyone wants to follow along on the ride, they can add me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or on my website, at Stingray Rob for all the social medias, and stingrayrob.com for the website. I also got some merchandise up there for anyone that wants to get on to Team SR2. And so, yeah, we'll be adding a few new items throughout the year, I'm sure. It is a little rough right now. I am the one shipping out the orders, and so when I'm on the road racing, it doesn't get shipped out. But the products are going to be improved over time. It's just kind of nice to get some merch out there for those that are diehard fans and that want to be a part of the family.
Well, definitely. And once you get that Indy Lights ride, let's circle back. We'll talk a little bit more about your history and all that, and we'll talk about who you're going to be running with, because I cannot wait for this year in Indy Lights. I'm so stoked.
Yeah, me too. You know, with 3 champions already announced to go with teams, I think it'll be interesting to see how the season goes. I don't know who's going to be the guy next year, but I'm hoping that I'll be one of them and that we can fight for a championship.
Stingray Rob, thanks for joining us. And yeah, let's circle back when you get that ride.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Coming up next, Elio Castroneves has a new ride, and we'll talk more about it here on Inside Open Wheel.
This This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, we've been lucky enough to know some of the pieces that have fallen into place in the 2021 NTT IndyCar Series season in regards to open seats. And one of those was just filled this past week with a veteran that really is going to step up the Meyer Shank Racing program. And it's his third team, and not many drivers can say they've been with three teams in the matter of 20 years. This one can. He's a three-time Indianapolis 500 champion, and he's going into his own championship battle this weekend at Sebring, but we'll talk more about that later. Elio Castroneves joins us. Elio, first of all, congratulations. I can't think of a better driver to pair alongside Jack Harvey part-time to make that team even better.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so thrilled and excited. Again, it's a great opportunity that Mike was able to create. And again, I say that Mike and his wife built this team from scratch. And look what they accomplished, you know, coming from, absolutely nothing. And now have a great sports car program, a great in-car program, extending now to a second car team. You know, even that it's part-time, still super excited to be part of this potential, the potential is huge here to build something big. And having Jim Meyer, again, still knowing him a little bit, and but having him around and with his passion, it just showed that this could be a great combination and partnership. And no question, Jack Harvey's been showing an incredible amount of speed. You know, and I guarantee in 2020 he's going to end up on the highest place on the podium. I'll be right there with him. It will be a lot of fun, both of us working together.
It's a six-race deal you have with Meyer Shank Racing, the Honda Grand Prix of Alabama, Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, 105th running of the Indianapolis 500, the road course race at Indy IMS on NASCAR weekend, the Grand Prix of Portland, and WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. So a good mix of road courses within there. Obviously, the 500, no doubt that you were going to be in it again next year. And it's an eclectic mix, I should say. You have some historic, you have the new within Barber. So it's a good, healthy mix to acclimate yourself within the team.
Oh, no question. We also have some tests, open tests that we're going to be doing as well. But, when they told me if I have any preference, I was like, look, guys, I'm here. Just bring it over. And whatever it is, it is. I have a particular track that I love. But in this point, I love them all, you know, and I'm excited to be able to have this opportunity. And again, being back to the IndyCar program, it's going to be awesome. I just happy, you know, I'm still have some unfinished business in IndyCar series. Yes, it's not the full season, but I tell you what, there is the Indy 500, which is the most important for me, and it would be great accomplish something that this young team are able to do it, and would be great to accomplish together. So I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. And plus, this week has been crazy, as you mentioned at the beginning of the interview. I mean, we're the battle of decision of the championship with the IMSA program. Man, everything's happening, so it's a great momentum.
And we'll talk about that in a little bit, but if you want to talk about the past couple seasons also, you haven't been running full-time because you've been focusing more on the Team Penske's IMSA program, but when you have run, you still have shown that you can go up to the front. Do you think that now you're running more than one or two races at different tracks that a win might actually be possible this next season?
There was no question. Look, when I go for it, I'm not just going to go to be around. I want to get my hands involved. I want to be able to what I did before. And I feel that we can make together happen, you know. So who knows? Expectation, it's something that you always have. You can only feed that expectation and with work, with dedication, and have the right people. I do believe Mike is the right team, and Mike believes in me, and along with Jim and the rest of the group. So everything is happening soon. Yes, we're excited, but we have some work to do. But with dedication and work, results will show up, and I'm looking for that. Looking forward for that.
Elio Castroneves, driver of the number 06 MSR IndyCar next season in the NTT IndyCar Series, joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. Now, you've been with Roger Penske for a good part of two decades. What was his reaction when you told him that you're going to move over to a separate team next season? Obviously, the IMSA program not going to be around, so it was kind of harder to put you in a seat next year, I would imagine, at Team Penske.
Yeah, Roger's been incredible. Not only, well, first of all, it's 20 years with Roger. Roger's become part of my family or part of my career and part of my life, basically. We partners in the dealership, and the most important, we're friends. And through this whole process, always being very open and transparent with Roger, he felt that was an excellent opportunity. He felt that it would be the right one with Mike and Jim. So for me, asking for his guidance, basically his blessing, and he's able to say, no, this is good. It's just a testimony of an incredible person, incredible human being. And I'm always have Roger, always, call him for any doubt that I have, not only him, but also Cindric, because Cindric is also started Team Penske the same time as me. So those guys, like I said, are not only my boss, but they're also my friend. And it's great that I'm going to be able to see them still.
And with Roger owning the series, obviously you're going to see them regardless, but what are your thoughts with it in the first season of Roger's ownership of IndyCar? How well do you think he is bringing IndyCar back to what it was in the post-split days?
Look, nobody wants to start with the situation that 2020 was to everyone, but Roger, if something difficult and challenging that happens this year would have happened to the best person, the best team, he does have the best people around to overcome those challenges. And look what happened. It was an incredible season. Looking forward to the future, I do believe Roger offers this security and shows that it's going to grow. Everything that he put his hands on, it turns into something big. And I do believe that's going to happen. Look, just seeing I'm getting back to the series. Jimmy Johnson is into the series. You have, champions and people from Formula One going. So when you see that, and people interested to come back, when you see that kind of interest, it shows that when Roger is around, people will trust. And it was a tough one, but he did an amazing job, and from now on, it's just going to continue climbing up.
This weekend, you're going to Sebring to run the 12 hours of Sebring and make up for March, and you are in a tight points battle in the prototype class. You and your teammate Ricky Taylor lead Ranger Van de Zand and your former teammate Ryan Briscoe by 2 points. How stressful is that going to be, now that you're not going to have to worry about getting an IndyCar ride for next year? But that's almost, it almost reminds me of 2008 when you had the tight points battle.
Yeah, look, if you were asked the beginning of the season, would have been in this position, mm-hmm. I would say you're crazy. We're not even a scoreboard. And all of a sudden, we have, after Royal Atlanta, we have this incredible charging up, myself and Ricky, unbelievable. Last race was amazing. Our teammates able to help us out to get to the lead on this championship, giving kind of the win away. So when you have that, it's the riding this wave. I've been saying, like, we're going to ride this wave. Rick and I are more than sync than before. And of course, you have to be a 12-hour race. It couldn't be just a 2-hour race. No, it has to be a 12-hour race. So just to increase more the stress, but it will increase understanding the hard work, but hopefully it will pay off. And we're excited. Yes, the margin is very small, but as I mentioned before, we would never thought we would be in this position. Now we just got to take the most out of it and hopefully put ourselves in that position again to clinch this championship for Aqua Team Penske. And the program is ending, but hopefully we're going to end in a high note.
Well, not just a 12-hour race, but a 12-hour race at Sebring, which is basically a 24-hour race anywhere else.
True. That is right. With the bump places and the how tough it is, you're absolutely right. But, hey, we'll make more special. It'll be more special.
Now, you talked about Jimmy Johnson and how he's going to be in the series next year. A couple of F1 drivers looking towards possibly extending their careers in open wheel here in America. Talk about Jimmy Johnson. That is such a huge get for a 7-time champion, not only to get a ride in IndyCar, but to get it with one of your former rivals, Chip Ganassi Racing.
Yeah, no, look, Chip is a guy that always picks talents, and Jimmy is not that you need to think about it. I mean, the guy won 7 championships. I became a good friend with him for a long time. Have a lot of respect for Jimmy. No question, it's going to be a challenge for him because, remember, they're going from those big stock cars cars to the very small and crispy open wheel cars that, you know, very, very quick. But he has a great teammate, and not only a great teammate, but support as a Chip Ganassi Racing. So he's in the right spot, and he will do extremely well. I already saw lap times that he's doing. He's going to be, once you're a champion, it doesn't matter what it is, you're always going to be a champion, and I guarantee he's going to put a lot of people to work the next year.
And you are going to be teamed with Jack Harvey, as we talked about earlier. Jack, no matter where he goes in the open wheel field, it seems like that he is up near the front. He's brought that Meyer-Shank Racing number 60, sponsored by SiriusXM, to the front. And that's got to be exciting, working with a young talent and kind of molding him into something that can be even better and bring that team to a Penske, to an Andretti, or to a Chip Ganassi and fight for the win.
Yeah, he's been showing a tremendous amount of speed the last couple of years, and especially this year in particular. And when you have a young guy like him, super close to win a race, and that's why I'm so excited. I hope I can help, in that aspect. But not only that, hope I can show the way. It will be a good opportunity for me, what I learned in the other big teams, especially with Team Penske, and hopefully together, we'll be able to represent this amazing team. And yes, it would be awesome. Him winning a race, it's already me winning a race, because I'm going to not be easy on him. I'm going to push him to the hardest so that we both can be up there. And I'm excited. I'm hungry. I'm excited. This is an awesome opportunity. And I just can't thank enough so many people from Penske family, but also now my new journey with Mike and Jim and Jack as well. So it'll be a lot of fun for sure.
So is this the mid-2000s Helio we're going to be seeing on track now?
Say that again.
Is this going to be the mid-2000s Helio we're going to see on track? The feistiness going to be back?
We'll be interesting for sure. So you'll see. You wait and see, and hopefully there's some unfinished business, as I said, in the IndyCar series. So we're looking for those clients to climb those fences again.
Oh, it's going to be great to see you back on track. One last thing. I know your Twitter handle, H3LIO. Are you going to change it to HELI06 after Sebring?
Yeah, we got to think about that now. It's 20 years with that number, so it'll be good. But we'll see what happens.
All right, Helio Castroneves, congratulations on welcome back to somewhat IndyCar racing. Good luck at Sebring, and we'll definitely talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much. Great talking to you guys.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Will Buxton joins us. Formula 3 comes to America. We're going to talk about the one of the entry series into Formula 1 next.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, new series will hit the pavement here in the United States later on next season, as Charlie, Antti, and I mentioned. It's taken on different forms. We've seen some IndyCar drivers run through it, but now we get to see the series in full. And to join me with that is a name that, if you've watched Formula One, especially on speed, you know this name very well. It's Will Buxton. He's live in Istanbul, Turkey, covering the Turkish Grand Prix this weekend. I've got to say, Will, this is fantastic that we're getting more junior Formula series, especially international ones, here in the States.
It's great. It's great. Thank you so much for having me on the show, by the way. I hope the hotel band aren't too loud. We are here in Istanbul at the moment. If you get a staggering rendition of My Way, it's not me. That's the hotel band. But no, listen, to your point, look, it's wonderful. And not to detract in any way from the brilliant support series that we've had on the bill at COTA over the years, particularly, last year, we've seen a number of really great feeder series and young American races coming through. To have the FIA Formula 3 Championship on the bill is really, really fantastic. As you say, even some IndyCar drivers, I remember when it was called GP3 back in the day, a certain Joseph Newgarden was making his way through the junior categories and made his way through that championship on his way to IndyCar. So to have it now as the FIA Formula 3 Championship, to be visiting COTA, it's really, really wonderful. And it's going to put on a great show.
Seven rounds in the 2021 schedule, three races each, two new venues. Of course, COTA is going to be the season finale for the U.S. Grand Prix, October 22nd through the 24th. Do we know exactly how they'll work these three rounds? Because here in the States with FR Americas, they qualify for race one, and then your times for races two and three are set from the previous fastest laps.
So it's all a little bit of a mystery at the moment. In days of old, with both the Formula 2 and the Formula 3 championship, what used to be GP2 and GP3, you'd have your main feature race on the Saturday, which you would do a normal qualifying session for, and that would set a grid. And then the Sunday race, the sort of the sprint race, would be determined by the finishing order of that first race, but with the top positions reversed. So you still had a sort of like a half reverse grid, so that if you'd won that race on the first day, you had to start sort of halfway down the order for the second race. Now, whether they do that for the second race, and then, as you say, maybe take sort of a combined fastest lap average for that grid for the third race, who knows? But that's going to be something really fun to look out for both the Formula 2 and the Formula 3 championship, of how they changed this going into next year. And really it's a change that's been brought about because of, you know, what we've seen with COVID, but also in a rapidly evolving world and the need to save costs. They've decided to shrink their calendar and to do alternating races, a Formula 2 race one weekend, then at the next Formula 1 weekend, a Formula 3 race, then Formula 2, then Formula 3 throughout their year. And it's wonderful that it's just so happened to fall that Formula 3 should come on the weekend of the American Grand Prix, and that it should fall at COTA, which is it's going to be great. The fans are going to love it.
And I'm hoping that we do see the format at least one feature race, because something Charlie, who, you know, he's racing Star Mazda at the time, now Indy Pro 2000. He races in Formula Ford here in the States. He suggested that he wants to see Indy Lights with a feature sprint race, where, you know, these guys have to do pit stops. And I think that's an amazing feature of overseas Formula Car racing, is they're able to do these pit stops so that when they get to Formula One or IndyCar, they know what it's like in a real life pit stop.
This is it. And, you know, feeder championships should always be looking to, you know, where they're aiming to get their drivers to. It should be the preparatory steps to get a driver to that next level. You know, I've always sort of looked at it that, you know, Formula 3 is almost like, you know, your school years, and then you get to your Formula 2, and that's like going to college, and then you get set out into the real world, and that's Formula 1. You know, it's your steps along the way, and everything that you learn should prepare you for that next step, and ultimately always with that view of where you want to get, and whether you want to get to Formula 1, whether you want to get to IndyCar, whether you want to get to endurance racing, you're going to have to deal with pit stops, and it's a vitally important thing. Just dealing with sprint races, yeah, sure, it teaches you the art of competition, it teaches you the art of racing, but it doesn't teach you that one very key aspect, which is, you know, the pit stop, nailing your marks every single time and ensuring that you put your place in your pit stop as, you know, as precisely as you can, because that can win or lose you a race.
We'll talk about the tech behind Formula 3 here shortly, but I do want to talk about some of the drivers that have come through Formula 3 this past year. We had a couple of Americans, Logan Sargeant, who really did real well. Of course, his teammate Oscar Piastri won the title, but tell you what, it's great to see an American making his name internationally. Also, Cameron Doss, who some of you may know from U.S. Formula 4 and USF 2000. Also, Jack Doonan, son of Mick Doohan, the son of a MotoGP legend. Yeah. Sophia Florsch and David Schumacher, also son of Ralph. So some pretty high names. How many are we going to see move up to GP2? F2. How many are we going to see staying here in F3?
It's, you know, it's always difficult to tell, and it's always really reliant on budget. And as we move hopefully out of a COVID world into a post-COVID world, you know, we don't know how sponsors are going to view, you know, the sort of the marketing advertising landscape going into next year. So we're very much stepping into the unknown as regards, you know, all of this. We know already that Piastri will move up into Formula 2. We don't know who he's going to move up into Formula 2 with, but, you know, I would look at, I think Logan Sargeant, as you say, you know, Logan has been a name that has really been on the world radar, I think, for some time now, and he proved just how valuable a commodity he might be to a, you know, to a sponsor, to an advertiser going forward in what he did in his first year in F3. I thought he was monstrously impressive. Whether he comes back to have a tilt at the title next year, I don't know. Given how well he fared, I could see him moving up to Formula 2. I really could. Whether he takes a 1 year or a 2 year view of Formula 2 with a view to getting into Formula 1. Again, it'll depend massively on the number of spaces that are available, but you know, again, that depends on how many spaces are then available in Formula One. It's all about, it's the craziest thing with these junior formulas is it's not just about how you fare and how you do as you're racing in those formulas. It's so much about timing, because you could reach the pinnacle and become Formula Two champion by the biggest margin that has ever been seen. But if there isn't a space in Formula One to move into, you're not going to move into Formula One. And it's all about timing. It's, there's as much luck in all of this as there is in planning.
Well, Buxton joins us here on Inside Open Wheel, kind of previewing Formula 3. As you know, it's coming next season to the Circuit of the Americas. So it's an interesting category. As I blundered earlier, GP2, GP3, its former iteration. But under the F3 banner, we've seen Prima become two-time champion. So obviously, they're the team that you're going to want to sign with, but only three cars per team allowed in Formula 3.
Yeah, but that's actually quite a lot. Well, for this right. certain sort of category anyway. In Formula 2, there used to be, well, there still is just only two cars per team. You know, it sort of shrinks as you go up the ladder. But yeah, Prema, a brilliant team. You've got the ART team there who dominated the early years in GP2, now known as Formula 2, and took the likes of Nico Rosberg and, you know, Lewis Hamilton to the title in GP2. They're, you know, one of the standout teams. But all the way down, you know, there's a real level of quality throughout the teams. And, you know, very much in Formula 3 and Formula 2, you are looking at a one-make championship. You're looking at the same chassis, the same engine, the same tires. It is all down to the driver, their unique relationship with their engineer, and, of course, you know, the ultimate team that they're with is the, you know, the car that they're able to put on the ground. But the level is set very much at consistency across the board so that the driver really makes the difference. And that's what makes them so fantastic. You know, it's really only sort of one step down from what you see in IndyCar, where the real differentiator there is, yeah, okay, to an extent, some of the aero packages that you see, which changes from track to track and obviously from supplier to supplier. But in particular, you know, where you just have that one core chassis provider, and really it's only the engine that makes a difference in IndyCar. Here, it's just everything that's the same, and it's great. It's the ultimate sort of barometer of talent. Stick all these really talented kids in the same car and just let them have at it.
And you mentioned the tech 3.4-liter mechachrome powered the Lara. It's Pirelli shot. They use DRS, which I think is interesting to see in the junior formula. Unleaded gas, 380 horsepower. But I want to talk about the DRS. I do enjoy it, don't get me wrong. But it's interesting to see such a spec series use DRS compared to Formula One, where everybody's doing their own thing.
Yeah, but again, you know, this is what we talked about earlier, and it's about preparation. So if you think that pit stops are a part of Formula One, well, so too is DRS. Now, is it necessary in a championship where it's a one-make series? The argument could go one way or the other, but where you are ultimately trying to prepare these drivers for life in Formula One, then that is something that they would need to know about when they get to Formula One. So it's become a part of both Formula 3 and Formula 2 over the years, just to get it embedded in their head that they have this tool at their disposal that they can use. It's all about preparation.
And for those who want to watch Formula 3, do we know if there's a TV package here in the States, or do we have to kind of, quote unquote, VPN it to get into a different country?
Well, I would never suggest that you go around the houses and use VPN. But honestly, I don't know. And the television deals are usually done at the start of each season. So I would keep your eyes peeled to your usual sources of information, whether that's Road and Track or whether that's, you know, Racer or, you know, wherever it might be. You know, these are the sites that usually have the news as to where you're going to be able to find it. But, you know, I'm sure that, you know, with Formula 3 coming to COTA, you know, looking at what Logan's done this year, if he comes back to Formula 3, you know, or any of the other, you know, amazing American talents coming through the ranks at the moment that I'm sure will find themselves on the grid, there is sure to be a package somewhere in the U.S. where you can find Formula 3.
All right, let's get outside of Formula 3, talk a little bit about Formula 1, and I know you have some interest in IndyCar as well. Let's talk about Formula 1. We've been seeing that the Haas boys now are both rumored to be coming to IndyCar. How close do you think that that's happening?
I don't know if it's close. I think it's going to need an awful lot of sponsorship money to find its way to either driver for them to make it happen. You know, interestingly, I think Zak Brown would have put Kevin Magnussen in a McLaren, you know, as an absolute no-brainer. We look back a couple of seasons when Kevin was actually the third and reserve driver at McLaren, when Alonso and Button were the drivers, and then Fernando went and, you know, sort of had his problems, and Kevin ended up sort of making his way into the car. But he was supposed to be driving IndyCar that season. I think he had a deal in place with Andretti. So Kevin's always had an eye on IndyCar, and if the announcement that Haas had been letting both drivers go had come earlier, I know Zak Brown had said he would have signed Kevin up in a heartbeat, but the timing had gone, the drivers had been signed, and while Zak is very happy with the lineup that he's got, for sure, I mean, Kev is one of those elbows out, you know, proper aggressive guys that I think would really excel in IndyCar. And interestingly, Romain Grosjean's been on the phone to Marcus Ericsson over recent weeks, you know, asking him about, you know, what do you make of IndyCar? How is it? And Marcus has said, you've got to get over here. It's just the best thing you've ever raced. And so, yeah, there's a real hunger there. I was talking to Sergio Perez earlier in the season as well. And, you know, when the news came that he wouldn't be racing at Racing Point next year, he said, you know, what do you think about IndyCar? I said, dude, you got to do it. You're going to love it. And he goes, yeah, but I don't like ovals. I'm really scared of the ovals. I said, you don't have to do the ovals. You could just do the street and the road courses. He's like, you can do that? Yeah, of course. You know, throw Connor in for the ovals or whatever. It'd be cool. I think, you know, if anyone would have the capability to make a last-minute change over to IndyCar, it would be someone like Sergio Perez, because he has the backing from his Mexican sponsors. You know, all things told, he's got about $10 million in pocket. So he could buy himself very easily. You know, he could fund his way into a third car at any of the major outfits and really be, you know, a contender, whether it's with a Ganassi or a, you know, an Andretti or a Penske satellite team. I think Sergio could do it. If Kevin or Roman could find that backing to make it workable in this shorter space of time, I'm not convinced. But it would be great, you know, and I don't want IndyCar to be seen as like the graveyard of where Formula One drivers go when their career's over, because it's not, and it should never be seen as that. But I think it's more about the fact that these guys have their focus so singularly trained on Formula One that all other opportunities kind of pass them by, and they don't even realize that these opportunities exist. So, you know, when Sergio turned around and said, oh, what you mean I don't have to do the ovals? They genuinely don't know. They're so focused on what they're doing, they genuinely don't even see, you know, they can't see the wood for the trees, as the expression goes. And so when these new opportunities arise and they see them for the first time, they're like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, you know, this could be something really fun. And it's just something they've never considered.
So what you're saying is if we get Romain Grosjean, it's going to be Ericsson's fault again?
Oh, whoa. Listen, I tell you what, Romain gets a bad
press. He does.
But that guy, honestly, you look at his career and look, when he was younger, yeah, he had a couple of accidents that mm-hmm. were, you know, not great. But you look at all the podiums that he pulled in a Lotus,
oh, yeah.
as it was back then. And when you put that guy in serious machinery, his junior Formula career, we've been talking about Formula 3 today. You look at him in Formula 3, you look at him in GP2. He had the same career arriving in Formula 1 as Lewis Hamilton. Had mm-hmm. the cards fallen a different way, Romain Grosjean could be looking as a multiple Formula 1 world champion right now. And as with all these guys, you know, you give them the opportunity, you give them the car, that talent doesn't disappear. And it's easy to pull Romain down, but I've always had a lot of time, always had a lot of respect for him. But it was quite funny, actually. You mentioned, you know, was it Ericsson's fault? And for for the listeners out there that don't know the inference, Romain crashed on his own under the safety car, and his engineer on the radio had blamed Marcus Ericsson for hitting him. It was quite funny when in Imola last week, George Russell, in a very similar moment, crashed out under the safety car under his own steam, and Marcus Ericsson actually tweeted, "Sorry, George," which was great.
You know, that's the thing. Another thing that reminds me of Ericsson is his countryman, Sebastian Bourdais. Bourdais, for those who are newer to the show, he got, you know, yeah, he won 4 Champ Car championships, but he got into Tailcoin equipment, he got into KVSH equipment, and the man won. So I think no matter what, I would love to see Marcus Ericsson. Yeah, I'd love to see Marcus Ericsson win, but I'd love to see Romain Grosjean get put in good equipment. But unfortunately, we're out of time.
You mentioned, if I can really quickly, Bourdais. And this is the crazy thing, is Bourdais came over to Formula One and didn't do anything. And there was this terrible song going around in France. And the lyrics were, Je m'appelle Sébastien Bourdais, tous les dimanches, je finis dernier, which means my name is Sebastian Bourdais and every Sunday I finish last.
Oh.
And this was a multiple champion stateside,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And it just goes to show that this side of the pond, sometimes you don't get the equipment, you can't show your talent. But Kev, Romain, these guys are multiple champions and would be such a fantastic addition to IndyCar were it to happen.
Well, I know you got to get ready for, you know, the weekend. Good luck this weekend. Have some fun.
Thank you.
We're going to bring you on more because there's so much more I want to cover, you know, outside of European racing, American racing. I hope you had a blast with this.
Oh, it's been great fun. I can't wait to come back. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Next week, we do the F4 FRA and some Formula Race promotions wrap up. We're going to have our experts on there. I'm Jeremy Scott. Catch us on any and wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, take care, everybody.